getting sober requires a lot more than mind over matter, a lot more than willpower. It's about leveraging the support around you. People in recovery typically need a mix of medical help, emotional support, and changes in lifestyle to manage their addiction, not just mental determination. As both a therapist and someone embracing the recovery lifestyle, there's one tool I always recommend to people needing extra accountability: SoberLink. SoberLink is a high-tech breath analyzer system designed to help you get and stay sober. And here's why I love it. You'll test the same day every day, eliminating testing anxiety. Friends and family receive instant test results, helping you rebuild trust and preventing relapse. Accountability is a part of that, and it's something to really be embraced. Devices have built-in facial recognition, so your support circle knows you're testing, and tamper-resistant sensors flag any attempts at trying to beat the system, so your sobriety is never questioned. So let 2024 be your best year yet. Visit soberlink.com/TAM to sign up and receive $50 off your device. That's soberlink.com/TAM. And let accountability be your guide. A quick note before we start this episode. In this episode, we talk about suicide. If you're out there listening to The Addicted Mind and you're struggling, please reach out for help. You can contact the suicide hotline at 988 and talk to somebody 24/7. Please reach out for help. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlund. I'm your host, and we are on to another episode. Today, I have two guests, Derek Duchesne and Dr. Zaid Fadul. In this episode, Derek is going to share his own personal struggle with depression that led him to a very, very dark place in his life, and how in that moment, he was able to get some psychedelic therapy that helped him transcend that dark space. And so he's going to share that story. What he did is he founded Better You and collaborated with Dr. Fadul to form a place that revolutionizes mental wellness and addiction recovery using cutting-edge psychiatric and psychedelic therapies. So on this episode, we're going to hear Derek's story, and we're going to hear some of Dr. Fadul's expertise about how ketamine impacts the brain in a way that helps us transcend some of this darkness if we're stuck in depression and hopelessness and we can't get out. I think you'll get a lot out of this episode. Derek is really open about his story and his own struggle with darkness and how he was able to transcend that and really find new purpose and meaning in his life, which is exciting for everyone. So stay tuned for that. If you are getting a lot out of the Addicted Mind podcast, please leave us a review in whatever podcast app you use. That really does help people find the podcast, and I just really appreciate it. It means a lot to me to know that The Addicted Mind is having a positive impact out there. So thank you all who have taken the time to do that. I really appreciate it. And don't forget, you can join our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and type in Addicted Mind Podcast, click join, and continue the conversation online. All right, everyone, stay tuned for this episode. All right, everyone, welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. I've got two guests today, Derek Duchesne and Dr. Fadul. And Derek, we're going to talk a little bit about your story with depression and I want to say even hopelessness to a point of possibly suicide and getting out of that and all the work that you did. And Dr. Fadul, you're going to lend your expertise about a different kind of therapy and a different kind of help when we're talking about these kind of issues. So why don't I have you each introduce yourselves and then we'll go from there.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dwayne, for having us. My name is Derek Duchesne. I am the founder here at Better You Therapy and never thought that I would be where I'm at today or in mental health, but I'm super grateful to take what I've learned through my own darkness and my own work and what's helped me and be able to share that knowledge and be able to help others through their darkest times.
Thank you. Thank you, Derek. What about you, Dr. Fadul? What brings you to this work?
I'm Dr. Jay Padul. I'm very passionate about mental health issues and addiction. I'm board certified in primary care and addiction medicine. And being a veteran in the military, I've seen these issues up close and personal year in, year out. And I'm the chief medical officer for Better You, and I was really drawn to Better You because of Derek's very compassionate approach and very open mind towards, you know, alternative methods and regular methods of treatment. He just believes in having lots of choices and a lot of tools, and we like to really focus on customizing approaches for each patient.
Awesome. All right. So we're going to get into that. Let's, Derek, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story? And I think when we get into this work, most of the time when we're dealing with mental health, there's some of our own personal stuff that comes into play here to motivate us to do this work. So how do you feel about sharing a little bit of that?
Absolutely, Dwayne. Where to start? The summarized version of it is I had a really good thing going for a few years. I thought my career, my work was in a good place. I helped scale this organization that I felt like was part of my family, and really I thought I had some really great people I was working with and built something really special. And at the same time, I was in this what I thought incredible relationship at home. And over a short period of time, so I never really struggled with depression, or definitely not suicidal ideation or suicidal thoughts consuming me up until I did. And I never really understood it. And you know, you would hear about people making that choice and taking their own life. And there's a lot of conversations about it. There's a lot of judgment around it. And I was guilty of kind of partaking in that kind of loop or that narrative that goes around, like, how could they had everything. If I had a piece of what they had, you know, I would never make that decision. And that's so selfish. How could they hurt everybody around them? And going through what was really part of my identity, which was my business and my relationship. And when both of those things in a short period of time took kind of a 180, I lost, I think, my identity. And I didn't realize it up until my mid kind of 30s that everything, my why and when I was getting out of bed every day and my happiness was based on external factors, right? It was based on external validation. And I'd lived probably most of my life like that. And once these things, once the relationship kind of took a 180 because I dedicated too much of my time over the last few years into work, and the work stuff kind of took a 180. I became very lost and kind of got stuck in these cycles of guilt, shame, blame, and just kept getting worse and blaming a lot of external factors on who I was as a person, and that I'm not worthy anymore, that I'm not worthy of success, I'm not worthy of love, which spiraled into I'm not worthy of life. And at that time, I was seeing therapists, seeing psychiatrists, taking all kinds of every kind of modality, every kind of thing.
Before you go there, I you know, talking about that part of how you were trying to get help, you said something I think what is really kind of profound. You know, I didn't struggle with this until I did struggle with it. And I think for a lot of people out there, that's their experience. When we're doing well, you know, we don't think about that stuff and you think, oh, I would never go there, or I would never think about that. And then all of a sudden, like you said, you have some kind of crisis in your life and there you are. You're like, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't think I could ever get here. And here I am.
Yeah.
In this mental space.
Yeah. And when you're there, like the tools to get out of it are pretty challenging, right? To get into a good a good psychologist, even if you have great insurance, to get into a psychologist, you know, it could be weeks or months. You know, if you go see a psychiatrist, it's take this pill and come back to us, you know, let's figure out in 6 to 8 weeks after you side effects may make things worse, and then we'll see if there's an adjustment. And throughout that time, you know, you're giving your brain that's already sick. Like, nobody makes that decision to take their own life, that final tragic, like, thing. They never make that because they're thinking clearly, or they're thinking about the people they're going to hurt, or, it's our brain is sick and our brain is telling us that this is the answer. This is the way to get out of this loop. This is the world's better off without me. And as you're in those kind of loops and those repetitive negative thoughts, it just feels like it gets worse and you're kind of drowning and suffocating. And I was taking, I got put on two different types of antidepressants over the course of a couple of months. And that's when I think I became even more suicidal. And it got to a point where I was sitting, what I thought was watching my last sunset, and I was holding a bottle of tequila, big bottle of Xanax right in front of me. And this is, crying my eyes out. This is it for me. And a friend walked into my house and helped me. Yeah. Basically brought me to a ketamine clinic the next day and stayed the night and probably saved my life.
So you had been trying these other things to try and get better. It sounds earlier you were saying, you had tried therapy, you were trying these medications, but it wasn't really working for you. And you got to that point where you're there with your Xanax and your alcohol and you're ready to go. Thank goodness you had somebody there.
Yeah. I think about that quite often. And really what I think about is like the people that I would have hurt and the people that depend on me. And I'm very fortunate to have somebody there, because I would have just been another story of, or another statistic that this is a decision that I made. And I hope that other people, when they're going through this kind of thing, and this is why we created Better You, that where you're in those depths where it feels like you're so disconnected from yourself and so disconnected from the outside world, that there is hope. And there is alternative methods to find that connection again, because you're not, if you feel connected to who you are as your core and you feel connected to other people, you're not going to make that choice, right? You're not going, like, it's just not.
You can't see the bigger picture. Right.
Well, it goes against human nature, right? Our will, our, like, at our core is to survive, right? To fight, to thrive, right? That just the likelihood of us being born is so astronomical, and then to be here is such a gift.
But when we get into that very depressive state, our focus gets so narrow that it looks like the only option we have.
It's tunnel vision.
It's tunnel vision. It's to just end it, because there's just no other piece. There's nothing else we can see in that moment. I don't know. Does that make sense to you? And does that feel right?
100%. There's your judgment isn't there, and you're the only way. I used to look at it like, oh, this person had a moment of weakness, or this person, it was a lapse of judgment, or this person was intoxicated, or this person was taking drugs, or this person was doing X, Y, and Z, and all the kind of things that we tell ourselves of why this happened, or that shouldn't have happened, or how it could have been avoided, until we actually feel those things. And which obviously changed my entire perspective and understanding of it. And it wasn't until the pandemic hit when I realized that it was a lot of people probably going through very similar experiences where everything in their life kind of got upended and took a 180, and their identity could have been shattered or changed, or things got a lot harder. And it's not, if it can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. Like, I never struggled with depression. And I thought people that when this happened, that people were struggling for years, or they there was all these external factors, or they had all these things, that this weight of life just crushing them. And everybody's perspective of life, and everybody's stories, and everybody's challenges, and everybody's burdens, and the things that they carry inside is different, and the shadows that we don't see.
Yeah, and when we're in that darkness, it's almost impossible to see out. And it sounds like you had someone there for you that could pull you, and got you to that that clinic. And so something happened there that sounds like transformed you or transformed your outlook.
Yeah. I mean, I could write almost a novel on what that experience was like for me. And to be clear, like I've tried psychedelics before. I've tried psilocybin, I've tried, you know, mushrooms, I've been to music festivals and in my younger years, and I never understood the kind of therapeutic aspect of it. And when, even in my darkest moments when I was suicidal, my friend said, I'm going to take you somewhere that's going to help you. And it's this ketamine clinic. And even then, when I had exhausted everything else, I was incredibly apprehensive because, hey, I'm like, this sure. It's another synthetic pharmaceutical that I'm taking. I've already failed that path, or that path has failed me. It's a horse tranquilizer. This is stupid. I'm not doing this. And my buddy said, well, what do you have to lose? And then thankfully I went in, and I get a few minutes into my story of why I'm there with the doctor. And doctor cuts me off, and wasn't a mental health professional, was an anesthesiologist. And he says, or he asked me if I'd ever tried mushrooms before. I said, yes. I said, I'd be just fine. I took my blood pressure. There was no preparation of going into it. And I think that these kind of very profound experiences can be just as traumatic as they are therapeutic, if not done properly. Fortunately, I was able to, you know, to navigate it. But it came in, took my blood pressure, did the IV, and for the first time in a while, I don't know, probably a year, it was the first time I felt like I could breathe again. Like immediately, the feeling was almost, it swept me off my feet, and this weight had been lifted off my chest, and I felt this sense of remembering who I am as a man, remembering that these stories of how terrible of a human being that I was telling myself that I wasn't worthy of being here, that all of that was immediately gone. And
it sounds like it opened up that tunnel vision. From moving from that tunnel vision, it started to open up your, like, there's other possibilities here. I can see beyond just this narrow focus of despair and darkness.
Yeah, exactly. The immediate shift in my perspective, like all the things that I'd been going through and all of these thoughts in my head or the things that had happened, it allowed me to look at them as exactly that, right? These are just thoughts in my head. Now I'm the observer of these thoughts. These aren't my identity. These thoughts telling me all these things, like I'm just looking at it like it was just another person saying these things, not me. All these traumatic kind of things that kind of got blown out of proportion in my life, those were just things that happened to my life. Those don't define me. And just that tweak in the way that I was looking at these things, and this change in perspective changed everything. Right? I changed the way that I saw myself. It changed the way that I saw the world. And I think that's where the really profound healing began.
And then you also talked about that other piece of it that I think you're starting to allude to that, but is that integration piece of taking this experience and turning it into something that really transforms your vision. I think like that. I would love to ask Dr. Fadul, when Derek is talking about this experience, what's going on there and what's happening? You know, when a person is in this state, they're in the state of depression and they move into this process, what's going on there and what's happening?
Depression is like a 1,000-pound bag that's just sitting on your entire being. And it really feels like it's holding you down. And one of the benefits of ketamine, at least what I've seen with the patients and particularly what Derek's describing, is it's almost like you're saying, here, you hold this for a minute. I'm going to step over here and I'm going to take a look at what's going on. And you go, huh, that's a 1,000-pound bag I've just got sitting on me. Maybe I should just not pick that back up. That is a super oversimplification, but I think it really speaks to what a lot of patient experiences are. You know, a lot of times when you are sitting with your best friend and they tell you about their problems, it's screamingly obvious to you what they need to do to fix them. I mean, just it's so objectively easy to diagnose. And then when we look in the mirror and we think about our own problems, we just can't seem to put our finger on it. We can't seem to see it. The fascinating thing about ketamine, with that dissociative state that a lot of patients will get into, it's almost as if they're stepping out and now into the role of the best friend. And no one knows you more intimately than your best friend, essentially. And now all of a sudden, you know everything and you're looking at things and you're able to weigh them out. One of the beauties of dissociation is that you drop a lot of the defense mechanisms that we learn over time to protect our ego, to protect our feelings and our emotions. And you just say, you know what? I screwed this up. Or this is a bad idea. I've got to stop going down this road and stop going down this path. And it gives you this clarity of thought. It's essentially reframing, you know, the problems that we're facing. And all of a sudden, you don't look at it through a child's eyes. You don't look at it through a jaded person's eyes. You look at it through an objective, rational person's eyes that says, you know what? Maybe I've drank a lot, but I'm going to stop doing that now. Or maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I got taken advantage of. Maybe I had a horrible divorce. But that's just one experience, and I can't make it pervasive into every experience. And all of a sudden, having that clarity gives people that ability to just move forward, you know?
It's that shift. It's like, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, we can look at someone else and we can go, we can see it. Like, we could see it in others. But man, if we tell that to ourselves, it's like bouncing off a wall or something. It's so, yeah, we get so stuck in our thoughts. So it sounds like for you, Derek, like this opened that. And like you said, you were this impartial observer to see your situation from this new perspective. So can you continue to, I guess, what happened next as you started to get that new perspective, and where'd you go from there?
Yeah. So I think my treatment was about 8 o'clock in the morning, and I hadn't been showering really. I mean, maybe once a week maximum. I hadn't really been eating, definitely wasn't sleeping. And I just to get out of bed and brush my teeth, it was just taking all the willpower in the world for a long time. And that day, so I wasn't taking care of myself. And that day, right after, I went home, I showered, I went for a run for the first time in I don't know, probably 8 months, and then 6 months, and then I showered again, which felt really good. And
yeah, we're all grateful for it, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. And I just don't think. Self care is just not, it's not part of the, you know, it's not part of the program when you're going through it. And also my home environment, everything reminded me, my home office, obviously of work, all my furniture and artwork was also with the girl that I had been with for years. And so everything around me just, even it wasn't a conducive environment to getting away from everything. And I wasn't ready to part ways with everything I own just yet. So I called a friend who happened to be on vacation at the time and had this beautiful little rental place outside of the country. And he said, hey man, like, you're going through a tough time. You want to come stay with me and come stay with me for a week or so. And I did. And it allowed me to, I think, really integrate that process of what I went through and separate me from all of the constant reminders of this previous life that I was so attached to and reflect upon. I mean, at that point, like, you know, even a couple of days after that first session, the person who I had become over the past, you know, 6 months, that was a completely unrecognizable person to me. The fact that even a week before then, I was thinking about, like, constantly about how the world would be better off without me, and how, like, just I became this victim mentality, which that was never my mindset my entire life, and so it became this unrecognizable version of myself, and obviously there was still a lot of work I had to do. There was still a lot of processing, a lot of stuff I had to get rid of. A lot of moving parts, and what was my next move going to be in life? What was my next career choice going to be? What was the next job going to be? What was, you know, when would I ever be ready to trust somebody again? Do I trust myself to if I'm that vulnerable or I let things get to me that deeply or hurt that much, am I ever going to be able to love like that again? So there's obviously a lot of work that had to be done. And I think traditional talk therapies is useful for everybody. For me, it wasn't effective in my darkest moments because, like, similar to what we were saying before, when you're talking to your best friend or therapist or doctor or complete stranger, whoever, people can tell you things. And at least for me, I was not receptive. And I knew I would hear the things, but it would not resonate. But in my head, it's nobody understands how I'm feeling. Nobody understands me. Nobody understands my situation. Nobody understands these thoughts that are running through my head. And I think the magic behind what ketamine therapy does is it allows you to, like, what's a good therapist do? They ask the right questions for you to come to the right conclusions. And so this kind of unlocks your inner healer and unlocks your ability to look at things from a bird's eye view and a different perspective and step out of your own cycles and your own nonsense. And that's where, yeah, that transformation lies. And that integration piece is critical. There was no integration, by the way, at the clinic that I went to. It was, what are you doing next week? Come back and sign up. And
right. Yeah. Like getting that piece of taking this moment, taking these new thoughts and applying them, incorporating into your life. And I guess changing the way you're thinking, because now you have a window in or a wedge into that locked way of thinking that gets us stuck in our depression or anxiety. You're able to open that door up and, like you said, be your own friend. But yeah, we get kind of stuck there. It's hard to do. So Dr. Fadua, what I want to ask you is, so once you have this experience, and I know a little bit about ketamine, so, but not everybody listening will know what's going on in the brain. You know, once you have this experience, you're now, you've had this experience of being the impartial observer of your thing. You've been able to put down that backpack, that heavy backpack, and now you're integrating this into your life. What's happening there? And what's going on for a person to be able to now take this experience and I guess, like Derek, what you were saying, integrate it?
I want to answer that with a question. Have you ever taken a new way or a new route home?
Occasionally.
And it surprises you because you're like, wow, that might be a little faster. Or maybe it's not faster, but it's just another way. A lot of times what ends up happening is we'll form new neural connections. And we'll also gain some flexibility in our neural pathways. And that allows us to think about things a little differently, and it allows our brains to grow. The right. Neuroplasticity effect for psychedelics is well studied and pretty profound. You also can develop your new neurons, not just with psychedelics, but also with consistent exercise. But having that mental flexibility is really an absolutely wonderful tool for dealing with adversity. A lot of times when we're younger, I'm going to say 5 years old because I have several little kids, you know, if you don't give them what they want, it is literally the end of the world because they don't have that perspective yet. And as you get older, you realize, wow, I didn't get a cookie, but maybe I'll get one later, you know, and maybe it's just a matter of, I just can't have it right now. Not, I just can't have it forever. That permanence is one of the things that happens when you don't have that neuroplasticity. And so having the ability to shift your thinking a little bit, having those new neural networks develop, you know, it's akin to even post-stroke for patients. When you have a stroke, you lose a portion of your mind. You have to relearn how to talk. You have to relearn how to walk. Some functions you may never get back, but some you do. And it comes not by getting blood flow to that piece of the brain. It comes by developing new neural networks and just relearning how to do things.
So a question. So when we were talking earlier about that tunnel vision, this would be that, right? We're kind of locked in this way of thinking. Like you said, I mean, I usually do take the same route over and over home. I mean, occasionally I change it, but, you know, I know what that route is. I know where I'm going and I just do it and I don't think about it and I go there. But is this kind of what we're talking about, that locked in tunnel vision and we can't get out of it? Like we're stuck there. Like this is the way our brain goes and everybody can tell us go this way, you know, hey, go left on your route home. It's going to be quicker, but we just keep going straight. And is that what you're talking about? When we do ketamine, it starts to open that. Would that be correct? What I'm saying?
I think that's a good way to look at it. I mean, in the end, it's all about safety. I'm a doc. I've trained 15 years ago. And I can tell you right now, it's very difficult for me to do new things that I didn't do in the safety of training when I had the ability to learn in a really good environment to train. It's very hard to convince me to do new things because I spent 3 years doing it one way and it always worked. And I learned that was the right way. And even though medicine has grown leaps and bounds, I have to be very cognizant about trying to push myself out of my comfort zone. It's the same thing for everybody in every avenue. We've always done it this way. Why change? I'm comfortable. I'm secure. I know what's going to happen if I just go about it this way. And sometimes you need a little, just a little push.
Even if it's just dysfunctional or detrimental to ourselves, like when we're talking about addiction, we kind of get stuck in that path.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we get stuck there and we can't move through it.
It's a feedback loop because ultimately I know if I go this way, I'll get home in 8 minutes. And then I get home and I feel rewarded because I just did exactly what I was the mouse getting the cheese. You're not rewarded for experimentation. You're not rewarded for trying new things. You're not rewarded for getting home faster if it's only a minute saved or 30 seconds saved. Just do what you normally do. And so that becomes its own feedback loop. And you start doing it over and over again. When you're depressed and you didn't get out of bed and you didn't shower and the world didn't end, why am I putting the energy in? Like, what do I care, right? Then the next day goes and the next day goes and you just take the path of least resistance. You know it's okay because nothing changed.
Right. Right. Even though it's not functional.
Well, I think the what ketamine really does that Dr. Fadul emphasized on, and this is on the habit formation part, right? So when we get into these bad habits or these bad thought patterns or these bad loops, that while ketamine therapy can help us break out of those, like it's still up to us to do the work, and it makes it easier for us to do the work, but we still got to do the work.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about that part and how you took this and you put it all together and you're on a different mission now. Something obviously changed, right? Because things that were important to you when you were in that darkness or going through that, I'm guessing they aren't important anymore, or mm-hmm. something shifted there.
Yeah, it's like I said, I never imagined that this would be the path that I'd chosen. But in my darkness and in my mind and my own experience and seeing what happened to the world and with COVID, like I felt it was my responsibility to share what helped me, because in my mind, but we just found the cure for suicide and nobody's talking about it. I didn't know about it. And I'd spent years in alternative medicine prior to this. And while everybody's situation and everybody's thing is unique, I had thought that I had exhausted all of the other treatment options from talk therapy and traditional methods and psychiatry. And this brought me back. And while, most people that don't get to that extreme, that's when I started, the more I learned about mental health treatments and how archaic they were and how they hadn't really changed in, 100 or so years. And none of it was, none of the programs that I went to or the medications or the doctors I saw, none of it was designed to actually help me get better. It was all to help treat how I was feeling. I can't sleep. All right, take this. Oh, now I have anxiety. All right, take this. I'm stressed out. Take this. And now I'm depressed. Take this, and not actually designed to help me heal. So I wanted to take what I'd experienced with the medicine and make it a lot more accessible. My first session was $1,500, which is, astronomical.
It's a lot of money for a lot of people.
It's a lot. And almost, to the point where, and so out of reach where it's like, keep living in this unlivable life or spend the money. And obviously at that point, there wasn't really, an option, but a lot of people, that's just not attainable. So I wanted to make it, and we've made it down to about $100 a session as opposed to $1,500. And so increase the accessibility, but also give people the support, the wraparound care and the love that I think is essential to go with this kind of program. And so like that treatment preparation, that one-on-one handholding and really structured guided sessions. So before, pre, post, the days in between and going into this medicine with intention and looking at from our sessions, the intention of healing from past trauma and then focusing on so much of mental health is focusing on the things like what's wrong with us? What don't we like about ourselves? So our program tries to flip that and let's focus on the things that we are good at or the things that we love about ourselves. And let's water that, put more attention to that. And then focusing on self-love and community and helping others, all the things that have helped me and our incredible team of doctors and psychologists and therapists and just regular people. And we all kind of, it's kind of this recipe of what taking what works for us and understanding that everybody's different. Everybody's situation is different. Not one thing's going to work for everybody. So we started this with ketamine therapy because it really helped me, but we started this with ketamine therapy because it really helped me. But now as we've expanded into more things, like we're also offering a limited med management psychiatric program to help people wean off of certain prescription drugs, because I think a big problem with mental health is people are overdiagnosed and overprescribed. We also have a talk therapy, psychotherapy program. We also have sexual health programs and all kinds of different programs now.
So really coming from a positive direction and nurturing that, the positive parts of ourselves to get better. And I think you're right in the sense that a lot of psychiatry in the last, you know, several hundred years was always focusing on what's wrong. And, you know, focusing on what's working and what's helping and can really help someone get out of that stuckness in to feel better in their life, like what you're saying. And I think I can feel it in your voice anyway. You know, when you go into that darkness and you come out the other side of it, you want to share it. You want to share it with other people. You want other people to know, like, look, you don't have to suffer like this. I know there's a way out, and it's so hard. Because like what we were talking about earlier, it's like, you know, getting through that tunnel vision, that there's hope out there, that you can do this. You know,
you feel alone, so isolated, right? And so like that's the hard part, is to reach people when they're at their lowest and at their darkest, where they don't want to be reached. Like so many people call us and they're so apprehensive. And I've been there, right? So I know how to break through. Like I had this patient once, you know, a couple of years ago, and I was talking to him, and had got the medication in the mail, got our brain box, our kit, you know, the blood pressure cuff and journal. And he was screaming at me on the phone when we're doing a treatment preparation, because you have to fast for a few hours before. He's yelling at me, "This isn't going to work. Nothing's ever worked for me. This is so stupid. Like, you know, I'm just going to throw this away. Like nothing ever works for me. Like, why am I even doing this? This is hopeless." And like just screaming at me. And unfortunately in mental health, you know, you kind of can become the punching bag, and understanding that it's not personal, that it's not about you. And so I let him get it out. He was fasting that day and very mad that he hadn't eaten for a few hours before the session. After he got it out, I said, "Hey man, like what's your favorite restaurant? What's your favorite kind of pizza?" And he's like, "Why? You know, why would I tell you that?" I said, "How about this? You've made it this far. I know you're going through it. I know you've said a lot of things hadn't helped. And after this, you know, we're going to time this out. You're going to do the session. And then in 2 hours, I'm going to call your favorite pizza place. I'm going to order that for you. And then you won't be so hangry. And hopefully we can have a different conversation coming from a different light." And then his tune kind of changed completely. Like, "No, we're not doing that. We ended up doing that. And the next day we had another conversation, which was much, much different. And as the conversation continued to flow, he obviously was going through something and lashing out. And because he felt so unreachable and unattainable, and instead of saying, you know, "Hey, this is why the treatment will work," or "Hey, this is this," and this, like, I was just like, Hey man, let's, like, you're going through it. Let's see. Here's the, if the problem is this food, all right, check it off the list. You made it this far. You've got the medicine. Let's just give this a chance." And it's really getting people across that hump of taking that chance. And once they do, I mean, the success rates are astronomical compared to other ways to treat mental health. It doesn't work for everybody. And it's not this panacea, silver bullet, cure all, right? You still got to be willing to do the work. You still got to be willing to get some sunshine. You still got to be willing to get movement every day. There's basic ingredients to our mental wellness that everybody right. needs in order to do it. And like so many people during the pandemic would say, wow, I feel, this is the first time I haven't felt depressed in years. I feel great. And I'd say, great. How's your eating habits, right? How's your movement? How often do you sweat? I'm like, oh, well, it's the pandemic. I haven't been outside in 3 weeks and I eat McDonald's every other day. I'm like, okay, well, I'm sorry to tell you, but this feeling that you're having now isn't going to last unless we can change our habits. And you tell somebody that's depressed to get more sunshine or to work out, they're like, get out of here. Right.
But
after a couple of weeks with ketamine therapy, right. When you can have that neuroplasticity again, the brain's firing, like when we're depressed, our brain's kind of shut down. And when we go into this dark hole or this tunnel, when we get things firing again, it makes it easier for us to start new habits. To do those things. Yeah.
To do the work. Right. Mm-hmm. I think where we get stuck is only when we're in that really dark space. Doing the work is just so heavy. It's so big. It's almost impossible to, like you say, go out and get sunshine. But you talk to someone who's really depressed, that is almost an astronomical task. It feels insurmountable. And that's hard to understand if you haven't gone through that piece or you haven't been in that depression. But that's what it's like. So, you know, what I hear is ketamine opens the door for the possibility for these things to just become a little bit easier, that you can start to do them, and then you start to make your life better. And that's that holistic piece that I think in mental health care, we really, really need, because it isn't just one thing. It's our whole life, and all of these things are important. And if we can do a little bit of all of them, we're just going to be better off. And
you're setting yourself up for success, right?
Yeah, but you need a little help sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. You need a little, you know.
And that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. And I think people are starting to understand that more. So okay, so we're a little over our time. I like to ask one question before we go, and maybe someone out there is in that dark tunnel, that dark space, and you could tell them one thing. What would you want them to know? What would you want to say to them? You can tell them one thing.
I'm trying to think of all the things that when I was there, I mean, that's a really strong question, because people would tell me, you know, that you are loved, don't do this, you know, you're worthy of this, shake it off. It's not that big of a deal. You'll find a new thing. You'll find, you know, a new relationship. You're a great value add to life. You're this amazing person.
But you couldn't hear it.
Yeah, no, when you're going through it, you don't hear it. Right? You're kind of bulletproof. So if there's something that I could say to someone that was really, really going through it, is remember who you are. And by that, I mean, as hard as it is, try to take a few moments with a journal and remember nothing relevant to your current situation, nothing relevant to all the things that are making you feel the way that you are now. But remember a moment in time when you felt your happiest. Remember the things that you do have in your life. Focus on the things that you do have in your life, and write those things down and put your energy to that, because all our emotion and all this weight is energy in motion. And we can give ourselves a break. And even if it's just a couple of minutes or a glimpse into that hope or this fleeting memory, even if it feels like you'll never feel that way again, do your best to spend a couple of minutes of just focusing on that and recalling that feeling. Your brain's going to tell you, well, I'll never get back to that point, or I'll never feel that way again. That's your brain lying to you. And I know it feels like you're all alone. You're not. I know it feels like nobody cares about you. That's not true. You could meet somebody, you know, in 2 years that could be the love of your life, right? You could be walking down the street tomorrow or go into a coffee shop tomorrow and find the career of your dreams. So what hasn't happened yet is the most exciting part of life. And if you're going through it, there is modalities that can help you. And if you've tried one thing or you tried five things, don't give up. Don't give up on yourself. And there are people that can help.
Oh, yeah. Reach out for help. There are people out there. Derek, thank you so much for coming on to the Addicted Mind podcast. I appreciate you just being open with your story. I appreciate Dr. Fadul's expertise that he lended to this interview as well. If anybody wanted to get a hold of you or connect with you, how can they find you?
And the best way to get a hold of me would be go to our website, which is betterucare.com. So it's better, B-E-T-T-E-R, and the letter U, and C-A-R-E.com. Social media is the same thing, just at betterucare. Our YouTube is at Ketamine Therapy. And if you want to get a hold of me personally, just send us a message and say, I'd like to have a conversation with Derek or with Dr. Fadul. We're here. And I'm available and accessible. And I think that's one of the most important things about mental health is understanding that you're not alone and that there are people that are there to help. So whether you're a patient or not, or whether you just want somebody to talk to, you know, we'll make ourselves available. And I just don't want anybody to ever feel that there's no hope for them, or there's no love left in the world for them. So I do my best to be that, be the support and be the person that I wish was there for me, and knowing that a lot of people don't have that. So I'm here for it, and I'm here for you.
I can really feel that from you, Derek. Thank you so much for coming on. I'll put all those links in the show notes too at theaddictedmind.com. Just once again, I just appreciate you sharing your story and sharing your vulnerability so that other people out there can find their path out of that darkness.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dwayne. And thank you for the important work that you do. And I'm so grateful and honored to be here and for allowing me to share my story and for the important work that you do and for having Dr. Fadul on.
You got it. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, all the show notes will be at theaddictedmind.com. So check them out there. And if you got a lot out of this episode, share it with a friend. And don't forget, click the subscribe button so you can get the latest episodes of The Addicted Mind. All right, everyone. Have a wonderful day. And I will talk to you on the next episode.
I'm Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so, so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober podcast wherever you get your podcasts.